It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker, and I should tell you just a little bit about this guy. He showed up on a, I don't know, a night when we had an AA meeting, and he was, well, he'll tell you, he showed up in a bad way, and things weren't going his way. And he showed up, and he asked for help, and then in a very short period of time, he did something that most people who are successful here in AA do, and that is he started giving help. So it's been my great pleasure to know Jim for just over 7 years now. 7 years, and I think it's 19 days. That's spectacular. So please give a warm Visalia welcome to just Uncle Two Beer Jim.
Hey everybody, I'm just Uncle Two Beer Jim. And I know that's a lot of, I could go Mr. on there as well. And I'm grateful today to know I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if I'm supposed to be looking here or here, so I'm just going to kind of look weird. So I'm going to go in a circle with my head like this, like camera, back to the audience. Come on down sometime, everybody. We're at 914 West Center Street.
Is that right?
Yeah. I usually pass it every week because I'm on the wrong street. I don't want to be an alcoholic. I don't long to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to be an alcoholic when I was a child, and I still don't want to be an alcoholic today. The only thing I know is that I am an alcoholic, and I'm grateful for that, because for 30 years of my life, I didn't know what was wrong with me, really. I had no idea. You know, people talk about, I'm going to start with experience, strength, and hope. So experience. I didn't realize why it was so difficult to get along with people. And people even in my family, my cousins, I had a hard time being sober around them and just hanging out with them and being comfortable. It seemed like there was this hidden agenda that I never knew going on with other people. And when I didn't fit into that agenda, it always made me feel less than. I did have some strategies to not feel less than. One of them was growing up young. My father owned a beach house in Hawaii, right on the North Shore. And that was the house I grew up in and learned to surf in. And he was the owner of a small business in Hawaii as well, a small demolition company in Hawaii. And I got to work with him and you know, tear things down. And for some reason, those two items, that beach house and knowing that my dad owned a business, gave me some ego that I needed to kind of survive in life, I guess. It gave me a little bit of I'm better than. And then remember, the opposite side of that is the fact that I never felt good enough to fit in as well, all at the same time. So I think as an alcoholic, I survived on ego and despair kind of all at the same time. I started drinking at a game of Spin the Bottle. It was awesome. It was my first kiss. And I'm pretty sure it was because I was drinking that I had the guts to kiss this girl. And if you're out there, hi. And sorry, it was the booze. No. No, it was my bravery and courage. No, it was the booze. And that was about in I think it was like seventh grade. No, I think seventh grade, we're about 12 years old or so. I had my first drink. And then in about eighth grade, I had my first drunk where my cousins came back from Missouri. And he brought some red, white, and blue beer with him. And it's actually called red, white, and blue beer. And it was warm and it was nasty. And we played quarters up in the attic. And his intention was to get me drunk, and I enjoyed it very, very much. It was like a freeing moment in my life that I realized, like, wow, my cousins are the best ever. I love them so much. And I did. I loved them very much. I just felt a little out of place around them for some reason all the time. So I got drunk that night, and it was good. It was good until I woke up the next morning and we went swimming and I had a hangover and I felt sick and I never wanted to drink again and I swore it off forever. And I think the thought of the night before was good enough to bring me back to drinking again, because once I hit ninth grade, we started to find the parties in high school and the kegs. And by the time I was in 10th grade, I was drinking and doing outside issues along with the drink. But whatever there was, it was always better with more. But it always started with the drink. It was always, I wouldn't be doing outside issues without drinking first. That'd be like, well, it's pointless, but what's the reason for that? So the party always got started with drinking. I woke up in strange places with strange people. I never had any money, so it was always a challenge to find my way out, but I survived. And I made it into college, and I found Animal House, and that was 4 years of college. And I graduated from the Animal House. And it was rough. It took me about 4.5 years to finish it. I think us alcoholics are actually intelligent people. We're smart, we're creative. We can get solve problems quickly and easily that other people might have issue with. And I just think that in general makes us talented in some respects. And you know, 4 years of drinking in college was awesome and horrible all at the same time. And it was I'm just thinking about my kids right now, off in college, and I pray they never do what I did in college. I don't want them to live the lifestyle that I was living, and currently they're not, and it blows me away. Like, I'm always like, why aren't you out there partying and drinking right now? I don't get it. Yeah. So maybe my wife and I did something good when they were younger. Or they're not out there living my dream, my dream college career. I actually quit drinking on my own my senior year of college. And when I graduated, I quit drinking, moved back to Hawaii to live with my dad over there. And my motto was, I quit drinking because I didn't, I wanted to meet the right girl. And I figured out that alcohol kept pushing me and bumping me into the wrong girls that, you know, just wouldn't work out or last. And a lot of crazy girls along that path. And so, I met her, been married to that 6 month sober girl now since, 1994. And, we got married, we lasted, she put up with, you know, like 20 more years of my drinking, and drinking, binging, blacking out, always looking for the party, going to Red Robin and making sure I drink like 2 big beers before the family gets there real quick. I still remember that night, not a good one. But that was my life for about 30 years. And you know, the one thing that drove me nuts from my wife is every time we'd be out with friends or out to a nice dinner and I just had a few drinks, she would always reach over and squeeze my leg and like knock it off all the time. The last 10 years of my drinking, it was like I could never be that really, you know, like, sophisticated drinker at the party where everybody laughs and enjoys me because I'm humorous and I'm lovely. But she never found me humorous and lovely at all. And when I was drinking, and it was like that for a long time. I came into AA after my promise that I was not going to drink. So let me tell you how I came into AA. I found a big wedding, big, beautiful, glorious wedding. I knew I couldn't drink that night. And so I decided to take some of my doctor-prescribed medications that helped me calm down. I took a few of them, probably three more than I was supposed to. And I went to the wedding, and I thought, this is great. This is fantastic. And I told myself, I'm not drinking, because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to drink too much of this thing. So I get to the wedding. I don't know, maybe 10, 20 minutes into the wedding, I'm going to find the bathroom, and I run into the groom, and he goes, "Hey, Uncle Chen, you want a beer?" And I go, "Yes, please." And for some reason, in all my planning, I didn't even know why I said yes to the first beer, but I did, and I drank it, and then my nickname, Two Beer Jim, came when I grabbed that second beer before I went back to the wedding. That one was my own choice. The first one he made me, because you can't say no to the groom. I mean, he's getting married, right? That would be rude. So the second one, though, I did on my own. And lo and behold, that was the beginning of my adventures for 7 years, 19 days in AA. Because the next morning I woke up, there was a note that said, "Get out of the house. We don't want you here anymore. Get help. Get out. Don't see the kids. Don't come around." It was that note. If you've ever got that note in the morning after a hangover, it's not fun. So I don't know. It was just a big gray morning, and my nickname number two came Uncle Jim because a niece that I have is in this program, and a young gal like. Like, it always blew me away that she was in AA and she was young, like in her 20s or something like that. And I'm like, why would you want to even get sober in your 20s? It was mind-boggling to me. But she called me the next morning and she goes, "Hey, Uncle Jim, you had such a great time last night." And she knew where I was. And she knew the whole story already. And she goes, "Hey, do you want to go to a meeting with me tonight?" And I'm like, "Oh, man." And I knew what she meant because I knew she was in AA and she was weird because she went to AA. And so I thought, okay, I think this is what my wife wants me to do because she said get help. So I said, okay, I said yes. And she picked me up every night for a week and brought me to an AA meeting, and the very, very first meeting I went to was this meeting, Sunday night, down at it used to be at the Red Cross building, right over there, and I walked in, and I really didn't want to be there, I was scared, I was worried that people would see me, but that night I heard some things that made me feel at home. And I'm going to try to find them in my book. I think we read them tonight. And I love this part of the big book here. I'm going to read that part. It was all the things like drinking wine and then whiskey and then... Why do I need to mark that page? You probably all know the page. If I find it here in a minute, I'll read it. But here we go. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone. Okay, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, and never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy. And when they read that at this meeting, it blew my mind that there were other people out there who were like me. And it actually felt good for the first time to be in a group of people who were normal and who would understand how my world was at that time. And it felt, I know it was day one. It wasn't like I was forced to even be here. I was like, wow, this is really cool. This book was written for me. And, you know, I'm a teacher, and so if it's in a book, it's got to be real, especially a book that's been around for a long time. Like, I'm like, okay, so it's legit. It's valid. I think that's the new word these kids are using these days. Totally valid. And I heard something else in the rooms of AA. It's on page 21, and it says, he may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He is the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And my wife used to always use that analogy or metaphor for me. It was always, last night, you did your Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing again. And when I read that, I become. To the people I most love, I become an ass. Sorry about the cussing. To the strangers who I need you to like me, I am pleasant and funny and wonderful. And I don't know why it's like that. We hurt the people we love. I hurt the people I most love. My children saw my drinking, and I'm embarrassed for that. You know, I wish I could be the story where people in here share, like, oh, man, you know, I quit drinking right before my kids were born. And I'm like, that's good. All right. Okay. Good for you. I did it. So my kids saw the worst of my drinking, and they lived through the weddings. They lived through me getting kicked out of the house. Now, it wasn't the first time I've been kicked out. I've been kicked out on multiple occasions. And it was all related to drinking. I thought it was because my wife was a horrible person and she didn't understand me. And, well, that wasn't the case. Anyway. There's some questions here that I love to read. Is AA for me? Is it for you? And, like, the first question in this book is, have I tried to stop drinking for a week or so, but could not do it? I marked yes on that one. Have I wished people would stop talking about my drinking? Yes. God, people just, you drink too much. Last night, you were Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I think it was Mr. Hyde's the bad one. Dr. Jekyll's the normie. And then alcoholic would be, I guess, Mr. Hyde. Have I changed drinks to try not to get drunk? Absolutely. My favorite drink was wine because in the Bible, Jesus fed everybody at the wedding wine. But when you drink two or three bottles, it has a similar effect to drinking whiskey and beer or vodka. So, here's a good question. Do I ever need a drink to get going in the morning? Well, I couldn't drink before work. But I tell you something, the weekend was a good time for a before noon drink to get going on yard work, just to make sure that, you know, I'm up and running. Of course, camping trips and vacations are always good times to drink at any time you want. So, that was my policy. Do I envy people who couldn't drink without getting into trouble? Yes. I have two drinking buddies, that we hung out with and camped with and vacationed with would never get in trouble, and I never saw their wives grabbing their legs And it seemed like they were getting off scot-free on their drinking, and I was envious of that. I was jealous of that. Does my drinking cause problems at home? Yes, I told you some of those. I was just getting kicked out of the house a few times and having my children see me. Does my drinking cause problems with other people? Everybody. I caused a lot of harm and a lot of damage in my years of drinking. Do I try to get extra drinks all the time? Have I tried to stop drinking but still got drunk? Yes. And have I missed work or cut school because of drinking? I think so. I know I missed a lot of school because of drinking. I honestly can't remember if I ever missed work. I did miss work because of drinking. I did. Do I have blackouts? Times I can't remember? I can't remember. I had a blackout because I was blacked out at the time, so I'm not sure if it was a blackout at all. Would my life be better if I quit drinking? Yes. Okay. And so I got to the end of this pamphlet, and I got an A+. Done. That would be a perfect score. It would be better if it didn't have to do with me being an alcoholic. Like if I was movie star ready. It's not that. It's AA for me. So I think if you answered a few of those as yeses, you and you're here, you might have a place that might be able to help you overcome your drinking to possibly get your life back on track where you want it to be, where your values lie. I came into AA that night. My niece made me get a sponsor, this guy right here. She told me to go up and ask a guy to be my sponsor. And it felt like a date, which is really weird. But I did it. And the first thing he did was, if you want me to be your sponsor, please read the first 164 pages of the big book and then call me. And I'm like, what? You gotta be kidding me. So that was it. And so I did it. Took me a week or two to read that. It was torture. And then I met with him, and he really didn't ask me any questions about what I read. And I'm like, what the heck? I thought this was going to be like a quiz or something like that. But that wasn't the case. We started going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and which some might call work. But if you and I want to get the life back that we most desire, if we want to keep what's important to us, if, you know, kids and family and homes and cars, and if you want those things in your life, which I did, I was willing to do the work. And it took me, this is not the model student. It took me like 2 years to finish 12 steps. So, a year alone on step 4. So if you think you're going slow, just remember me and think about a year to go through step 4. But I knew I was going to be here anyway, so I guess time didn't really matter. And I felt every week like something was happening in me to, I don't know, to heal. Experience strength. Some of the things my sponsor had me do were take up some service responsibilities. So I made coffee at meetings. I secretaried some meetings. I treasured some meetings. I started working with this group that puts on these events around here, which is called the Valley Speaker Series Group. And we put on a, Well, it started as, I think, just one Soberfest event turned into spring into sobriety and also into a New Year's event. And I try to get involved there. I've had sponsees. Please don't ask me to be your sponsor unless you want to do some work. Because that's the way I work. My sponsor made me do some work. I'm going to make you do some work because that's the only way I know how to get sober. That's it. So, and the work is just these 12 little lines in the big book. It's just 12 little steps, you know? And so it's really not that much. And if you know you're an alcoholic and you're going to be an alcoholic for at least 2 years, go for it. You got it. You got 2 years. So, I think the hardest step of all of these was really the ninth step for me of making amends to people wherever possible. And when you get to that step, you know, we worked them all out in step four. We did my fear inventory. And my I hate you inventory, which is called the resentment inventory, and a sex inventory, which really has very little to do with, you know, sex, but more like ideals and how I should behave around women and my wife and my kids and my daughter, my sons, how we're you know, supposed to work on those relationships. But I went to step nine, and I started making amends to people. One I did too early. I got a little in trouble for it because I did it before my sponsor told me to. But it appears to have worked out for me in that case. I made amends with my mom and dad. I told them all the destruction that I did in their lives. And honestly, they were much kinder to me than I expected. They didn't really forgive me, but they said, "We understand." You know, my dad, my father became actually more apologetic for the life that he had put us through. I was like blown away. I was like, "What?" He's like apologizing to me for a lot of the hardships we faced growing up with, you know, divorce and moves and never being really settled down, multiple schools, surviving the 70s and early 80s. Any of you know about those parents? Oh, yeah. We were part of it as children. In fact, we were the fun, I think. They wanted us around in all those times. We survived. And he actually went into that, and I said, "Dad, you know, I wrecked like four of your cars, and you never charged me ever for any of it." And I asked him, I go, "Would you like me to pay you back for the damage on those cars, or at least the insurance deductibles that you paid?" So I was hoping he would say no, and he said no. I was like, "Oh." Because that would have been a big amount of money. You know, I wrecked one car, my car there, two cars in Hawaii, three cars in Hawaii, four cars, that car. I wrecked four family cars due to my drinking, whether it be drinking while driving young or the next morning hungover, being too tired, I shouldn't drive. And you know, they never ever came down on me for any of those drinking events until, there was one event and I was totally sober. And this is the very first time my dad ever got mad at me for wrecking a car, but I was in this big work truck and he pulled in the car that was just repaired that I wrecked a few weeks ago, pulled behind me, And I'm backing, I have to back out this big truck, so I get in, and I'm like, and it's stuck. Like, the truck's not going anywhere. Well, I walked around back, and it was the car that he just repaired that I wrecked. And the ball, the hitch was digging all the way through the hood of the car towards the window. And he came out, and that was the first time I heard him very angry at me for any of my wrecked cars. And it was a sober wreck, which I don't know. And I heard him, I think. Maybe that was God's way of calling me. I need to stop wrecking his cars. So, experience, strength. Strength. Get a sponsor. Ask somebody if you can help out at a meeting. Tonight we have a business meeting here. Maybe you can volunteer in some way. Do I want to volunteer? Probably not. I'm lazy. I'm lazy at heart. Do I need to volunteer? Yes. Why? Is because it makes me come to meetings and, if I have that responsibility, I know I'm giving back in some way. So hopefully, it's good to help other people. It gets me out of myself. In fact, helping others is the time where I don't have to live in my head all the time. You know, I've been sober. Hope. Let's go to Hope real quick. I don't even know what time it is. How are we going to time? Hope. Hope. Okay. Hope. I hope that my brain can settle down and relax in life before I'm dead. I'm an overthinker. If people cut me off, you know, I still get angry and upset. I just know I try not to show it on the outside anymore. When people wrong me, I still stew over it. And, my hope is that I know what works. I know what works to calm those feelings down. And it's service to help other people that always gets me out of those brain, like, nuclear wars that are going on in my head. Help somebody else. If you can have a sponsee, get a sponsee. And try to guide them through the steps like you learned it through the steps. Also, you could pray and meditate. People talk about that. I pray every day. When I forget to pray, you know, because I said I pray every day, that was a lie. When I forget to pray, those are the days that seem to be rougher for me. Those are the days that I go a little bit crazy in my head. Those are the days where life is meaningless. Look at that guy, Stuart, smiling. I'm good enough. I'm strong enough. And I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me. I still get in the I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. And nobody likes me. And that could be a daily occurrence for me unless I'm working the program in some way. If I'm not praying and I still haven't mastered meditation after 7 years, Mr. Rogers has a great movie, with Tom Hanks in it. And, at the end of the movie, he's doing his prayers. And so what he's doing is he's on his knees praying, and all he's doing is saying the name of people that he's praying for. They're not big elaborate prayers. They're just like, I'm going to show you, for example, so my wife, Bill, that kid who wants to date my daughter. I just call him Smiles. She hates it. It's okay. My son, my boss, right, for my boss. And also those people who really upset me driving or at work today. And that's it. And then I don't have to get fancy and be critical of my horrible prayer. Because if I start talking it all out, I don't know the words. So That's my hope. My hope today is that I can live, what do they call it, serenity, to find serenity every day, and sobriety every day. What is sobriety? Well, you could have alcoholic sobriety, but can you be sober of mind? Can you live with peace and joy throughout the day so you don't have to take a drink? Can you have that mental sobriety every day? I think AA has given that to me, and it's work every day, though. Remember the prayer and the meditation and trying to be of service. And if you can do those things, maybe you too can be sober for 7 years and 19 days. But it's no picnic, and every day is not filled with sobriety. But AA provides a way to get it back when you need it most before you take the drink. Because why else do I come to meetings? To hear your stories, to remind me that I'm an alcoholic, so I don't drink again. Because when I hear your crazy stuff going on, I go, oh, I did that too. I better not drink today. So I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to know I'm an alcoholic, moreover. And I'm a father and a husband and a friend. So, and that's it.
Well, thank you, Jim. We are now going to start the discussion part of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So, again, we ask you to please limit your sharing to allow for this. There's nearly 20 people altogether, so just keep that in mind as you share. And again, we're going to be closing at 8:45 this evening to have that business meeting. So with that, I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Jim, who can pick on people to share. There's a list of folks here, and I'll bring up the screen and you can look at too.
Oh, great. Okay, so how about we start with Christian here?
All right, my real name is Christian, and I'm all it.
Hey, Christian. Hey, Christian.
You're in the AA pamphlet, the questions. I was just a lot of them. I was like, yeah, I definitely belong here. For years, I didn't want to nail an alcoholic. I just wanted to admit that I was pretty, that was it. And for years, my family was always like, man, you need to drink way too much. You need to calm down. Like, my mom for years has been trying to get me help, or at least trying to get me to get help. A few years back, got into a drunken argument with my wife. And it was not pretty. I woke up the next morning feeling like, just feeling like crap mentally and physically, but more mentally than anything. Called my mom's closure about it. I told her I needed help. Well, she ended up calling some gentleman here in Visalia looking for help. She went, well, some guy. I can't remember this guy's name for the life of me or what he looked like. He met and called me. I called him. She gave me another. I called him. We met up on Main Street, and he handed me up the big book, and said, if ever you need help in this hot pot, you know, you guys can get this program. I was like, yeah, I'll totally read that book. I'll totally do it. I went home, I threw that book on the shelf, and I never even looked at it. And I kind of wish I would have back then, because then I would have understood more of what my problem was. Probably would have fessed up to it faster than what I did. I probably would have grown up, I don't know how you live in a written partner and not getting reprimanded for it, but my grandparents were probably, I don't know, I always told me about it, but I never realized how she was. I guess my grandparents were the quote-unquote richest families in Farmersville, which is... my grandparents owned Parker Tire and Towing, and my grandfather died at the hands of a drunk driver. He was doing a beer run, And my grandfather was just so happened to be outside at the time it happened. Jumps on the hood of the car, the guy throws at him, my grandpa jumps on the hood of the car. The guy pulled out of the parking lot, swung my grandpa off the car, grabbed his curb, killed him instantly. My mother and my grandmother started mad in Farmersville, and my mother's getting drunk driving. And then after my grandfather died, the towing service started to take a dive. And then shortly after that, I guess they ended up just selling the business. They were still here. Who knows? Maybe I'd be sitting in these rooms still, or I'd be running that towing service right now. But things happened in my hindsight 2020 with the family, but I've got only a few more. I've only got a little bit more people left in the program. And in the beginning, I just get myself into it. I didn't know if I really wanted to stick with it, but after talking to a bunch of brothers at Pine and finally getting to meet Dave over here, he's talking about a lot of stuff and a lot of support, Jerry. Even after all four of these guys talk to me a lot, especially Mr. Stern now over here. There's been times where the way he spoke to me, I'm like, I don't like to hear that, but I need that stuff. I need that kind of stuff in my life. It's always been Mr. Lazy, but not mind to do anything, not mess up the stuff, but I need that in my life. And I'm glad it's there for me right now. I've been doing my big book study. And I finally finished my big study of Doctor's Opinion, doing the book where I had to actually read it, study it, but yeah, this program I've noticed a lot of mental growth in me, like tolerating more stuff, accepting a little bit more, realizing that I don't need to get pissed off over the little things that really get to me. Because there's a lot of times in the house where there's one dude or two guys, or a few guys at a time, I'm irritated beyond all belief. And you guys, any of the guys, I'm pretty talkative. Like, there's times where I just can't shut up. But then everybody notices when I'm not talking. Like, they notice it right off the bat. Like, look, they'll see me, and I'm just straight faced. I got my headphones in, someone will say to me, I got my headphones on full blast, just trying to push everyone out and everyone away. And that's what I'm trying to work on too, is when I'm mad, stop pushing people away. That's one of the things I need to work on, because that could be one of the things that draws me back into drinking. And I don't need that, because I'm doing my tally book today to take a look at yourself, book that you have to do. And one of the questions, it said the things you do, and I always push people away. I'm always afraid, like, people are going to leave me. My father left when I was 5 years old. I had friends just ditch me without saying anything. So I'm used to people just abandoning and leaving. So I've gotten to a point in my life where I just jump ahead and I push people away. I'm like, no, you're already going to leave, that's it. So they're like, I already know what's going to happen, so I'll do it before you can do it. And that's just something I'm trying to work on. And I'm glad I got all these guys around, man. When they notice it, like, hey, man, what's going on? You okay? What's wrong with you today? I'm like, no, you're fine. Cool. Right. No, man, you're not okay. What's going on? You're not talking. You're not doing anything. Like, what's going on with you? And they'll keep poking and prodding, so I finally open up and I say something. There's something I really need right now, okay? Like I said, if I keep doing that stuff, and at some point, even though I don't want to go back to it, I know at some point my stupidity and my arrogance is going to put me back to that dream. And I don't want to do that, because that's the point where, that's what it was in the book. It's like, I didn't think that people cared about, I don't think, I'm like, but you said, you know, I feel like I'm not worthy enough. I don't feel like I belong. I don't feel like people like me. I don't feel like I need, like, people really care for me. I don't belong in this city. I always try to be Mr. Confidence, but I always did a fake to make it with confidence. And that's why when I would drink, I'd be Mr. Cares and Mad, Mr. Happy, Mr. Funny. I made people laugh, and I thought drinking brought out more of that in me. But as I've really lived the last 2 months,
I don't need it anymore. I've been told by the chair right here, someone talks all embarrassed of this and that. He goes, man, stop being embarrassed, you're a social butterfly. So I've been realizing more and more that I felt your strength to be more to be charismatic and talk to people. Just shut up, stop thinking about it. And Jerry told me, get on your damn head, don't doubt yourself. Just don't say, oh, I don't know how to do it.
And
you don't have to do it, just do it. Second, you doubt yourself is when you're screwing yourself. So don't doubt yourself. Just jump in, feet first, and go with it. So, that's just something I need to start working on more and more. I'm doing better at it, but I just keep doing it, so I don't get the evidence. And like, screw it, nobody cares. We'll crack that ball again and take it with her. Because once that happens, I know I'm back at my house again. And I'll be there for another 60 days with 100 for it. But that's all I got right now.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
How about Stephanie online?
How do we get
Stephanie? Hi, guys. Stephanie, alcoholic. I'm fairly new. I think I'm like 35 days sober, but I'm really proud of that because it's been a while. Yeah. it was the hardest month. But I'm really proud of it, like I said, because it's been hard. I feel like I've lost everything. I hear a lot of stories, like I hear a lot of support, so I'm really happy for you guys that you get that. I still have my parents, so that's really good, thankfully. I've always kind of been the black sheep, but they have never given up on me. I'm not sure why, but I don't know. It's okay, though, because I have found a lot of serenity in my higher power, in the Lord. I don't think I would have made it through the last month. I got arrested back in October, which I've never been arrested before, so that was kind of an experience. Something that I have to deal with, but I'm trying just to learn to accept right now. And I'm just trying to read the big book as much as I can, do meetings. I try and do an in-person meeting and an online one at night. So I'm doing like two a day mostly. And then I'm doing outpatient rehab right now too. But it's been good. It's been really healthy. I really enjoy the share. I do think I find that the things that trip me up is the voices in your head that tells you you're not good enough. In group, they talk about a lot, like the bad wolf on one shoulder and the good wolf on the other shoulder. And you have to start feeding the good wolf and kind of not listen to the bad wolf, because I've been feeding the bad wolf for so many years and coping with doing a lot of drinking and a lot of poor choices. So I think that's just the hardest part, is just not falling into that trap of being like, you're a complete piece of crap. You know, you deserve all this. It's not like you were warned. But it's okay. I'm just taking it one day at a time. And like I said, I'm really proud of being sober. Life is good. You know, I don't have to worry about just being angry all the time. I see that now that I was really angry a lot. And I think I'm still really angry now, but at least I can identify it. Kind of talk through it before I get fly off the handle. But it's hard because I'm dealing with a lot of stuff and emotions and fear, maybe a little resentment. And all that's hard because I don't have anything to make me feel like altered. But it's good because I turned 40 a couple months ago. So it's time to grow up and, you know, and deal with these feelings, you know? But yeah, other than that, that's all I have. Thank you. I will try and make it for an in-person meeting, maybe next Sunday. I like coming in person. I think it's good. If I don't go to a meeting, I don't feel right. So even when I don't want to come, I've kind of forced myself to come, which sounds bad, but you know what I mean? Yeah, that's it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
How about Bill?
Bill.
How about Bill? I'm an alcoholic named Bill Heisman. I've heard a lot of interesting things tonight.
you know, I have to kind of remember that I showed up here really disinterested. I didn't need what you losers are doing here. Okay. I possess some kind of superior intellect or otherwise willpower or whatever, right? Is what I believe. And I've heard a lot tonight people talking about those voices saying we're not enough, and I really relate to that. And you know, the crazy thing about this, and this is something that I had to learn through a rich fourth step experience, through a very, very extensive, and I don't mean like time consuming, but like I mean a real fact facing examination of my resentments, is that on one hand, just like you guys have heard some of us say, we feel like we don't deserve anything, right? Don't deserve anything good, that is. That I'm a low piece of shit, I deserve to be punished, right? But then let you motherfuckers try to punish me. You know what I'm saying? Because obviously there's a part of me that doesn't feel that way. It doesn't believe that I'm bad or that I don't deserve good things. In fact, quite frankly, there's a part of me that thinks I deserve only the best, right? And when I don't get it, that even makes me even madder, right? And so there's this interesting sort of contradiction of beliefs and feelings and thoughts and ideas that I encounter. And, you know, I hang around with, I spend a lot of time with people who are moving in a better direction, right? And I don't find that just in AA. I find that in other places too. But I spend a tremendous amount of my time around people who are trying to become a better version of themselves. And the reason I do that, because that's not always a pleasant place to be. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I start feeling like envious, and I feel like, you know, why are they getting it and I'm not, and, you know, some of those old ideas. But what happens is I get a chance to be reminded about what's important. And here's just a stupid-ass thing that happened to me today. I was confronted with the word cynicism or cynic, right? And I don't know if any of you guys even know what that word means. I thought I knew what it meant. I thought it meant like somebody who's like critical, you know, or doesn't believe, you know, isn't optimistic, right? That's kind of how I thought a cynic was defined. Let me tell you what the dictionary says. It says, a person who believes that only selfishness motivates human actions, and who disbelieves in or minimizes selfless acts or disinterested points of view. And the reason that's important to me is that I don't think I'm a cynic, but you know what? I have been driven by selfish interests. And selfish is an interesting word. You know, sometimes you'll hear people say that AA is a selfish program, and I will submit to you that there couldn't be anything further from the truth. AA is not a selfish program. And I'll tell you why I believe that. Because if you look up the word selfish, you'll find that it says solely concerned with one's best interests, right? That part we get, right? But then it continues and it says without regard for others. And that's where it turns and becomes a problem. There's nothing wrong with self-improvement. There's nothing wrong with doing things that are good for you. What makes those things wrong is when I make other people pay the price for what's good for me. That's the crux of the problem, right? So, I've noticed my dad, who was somebody I could not have a relationship with 17 years ago, and now all of a sudden he's like living in my house when he comes to town, and there's a part of me that kind of resents that. It's like why can't my sister, who was always his favorite anyway, why can't she have the burden of a house guest, right? Why does it always have to be me, right? And so that's one thought. And then the next thought I have when I'm away from the situation, it occurs to me, you know, there's a lot of people who would pay a dear price to have one more day with their parent. And I'm just pissing it away. You know what I'm saying? With my attitude. And I want to be sure to present the whole picture to you. That's not the whole experience of with me and my dad. My dad and I have a very working relationship today. But if I'm honest, those moments that I just described, those do exist. And you know what happens if I don't tell you about that? Is I start to feel shame about it. And I start to think that there's something desperately wrong with me because I think things like that. And what happens when I come here and I tell you guys the truth, most of the time what I find is other people go, yeah, you know what, man, me too. And if I tell my sponsor some shit like that, he comes up with these really stupid ideas, right? My sponsor tells me some nonsense like, he says, well, you know what you might want to try? He never tells me what to do. He says, what you might want to try is, like, the next time your dad comes over, why don't you greet him at the door with the enthusiasm of a three-year-old whose father has just returned home from a day of work? And to kind of be, because I'm an ass, man, you know what? To be a jerk about it, to try to make it not work, right? Because I think my sponsor's always wrong. To make it not work, I literally was bounding, like jumping up and down, going, "Daddy's home, Daddy's home!" And I jumped and grabbed my dad and hugged him. And you know the craziest damn thing is, all of that negative energy just fucking disappeared. That comes back. Don't worry. But I don't get a break from me if I don't do these things. You know? It's not just about physical sobriety. It's not just about abstinence from alcohol. If you want to know the truth, I could not survive just simply being abstinent from alcohol because I feel way too much, man. I need a solution. And that's what I found in AA, is an opportunity to come and find other people that want to get better. And that are willing to tell the truth and take risks and be vulnerable. You know, it's risky coming in a group of, you know, guys, a bunch of you guys, you know, He-Man guys. I look at you guys and go, you guys are tough guys, man. I come in here and tell you some sorry-ass shit like that. I'm going to think, oh, these guys are going to jump me. You know. But the truth of the matter is, I have found is that people draw closer to me when I make myself vulnerable. And it doesn't make any sense. It just works that way. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
How about Leah?
Thank you, Mom. It's really good to be here, Jim. I heard this story before, but I think it was a time when you're going in and when you're out together. That's for sure. I connected with a lot of that. The whole, I like to say, conflict of mind. Ordeal, you know, I have a complex mind too, it never shuts up, never shuts off, it just keeps going, you know, keep going. And it can be my worst enemy, definitely. This program has taught me how to keep an active battle with that mind, especially with the negative, you know, that, like again, like you're saying that I'm not enough. I literally have it on the mirror in my bathroom, in my bedroom. It says, you are enough, in English and in Spanish. You know, I read it every day. I have to remind myself that I am enough. But, you know, I always felt like I wasn't really enough. And it wasn't until recently when I was like, you know, you can do this shit, you're okay, you're 55. You know, and with the help of AA, people in AA, people like Bill and Jim, you know, remind me you're doing great. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm just like, okay, you say so. You know what I mean? But now I see it. I feel it. I believe it. And as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, I feel it. And shit, I feel like this. I've been hit with a reset button. I can't, like, at least 10 times in the last, like, couple months. Like, you know? It's like Jennifer just might get into this routine and going smoothly and bam, another responsibility comes back. Hey, guess what? It's the responsibility for children. It's like, it's crazy. I think this is the first time in life happenings, like, I want to say 3 years, that I've had my kids with me for a whole week straight. Oh my gosh, oh my lord, I thought I was gonna fucking blow it. I was literally going freaking crazy. But I did it. I pulled through. I didn't call him. My secretary come with me. My secretary said, I'm like, you got this shit. Take your boys with you. Go to your meeting. You know what I mean? And you got this. They're actually pretty good. And the good thing about it is they listen. You know, one of them has no choice but to listen if he can't see. Now, he got cataracts at 12 years old. And that is a challenge for him because he's so smart. He's read, like, every book in his school library. He got an award for reading 700 times over his reading level. And he gets so frustrated because he can't read the book no more. He's an audiobook. And he gets irritated and starts calling his sister stupid because she only knows how to read three-letter words. And he just likes to pick on people because he can't think of anything better to do. You know, and Craig Dillon, you know how a 12-year-old can get cataracts. Actually, kind of odd. But he is angry. He's angry. And I didn't understand that at first. But I do now. I understand it. But, you know, he's angry. He's mad. He's mad because by him, you know. And I have to deal with it back. And I have to deal with it sober. Which is probably a good thing that I'm sober. Because if I wasn't, I'd be like, shut up. But, you know, I would definitely react in a different way. But it's a challenge, but he listens. That's crazy. And he listens to the meeting when we're meeting. He listens when we get in the car to go home and starts asking questions. Like, he's trying to understand it. And I realized that this week, like how much he is actually processing. And it's doing some good for him. It's just kind of, it's not what I expected from him, and kind of cool, because it helps him out, and it helps me out, and he's just like, I like your break, mommy. You know, and that's something I never heard him say. Because he's the one with the mouth. He's like, I don't like your break. Is he this? Is he that? He starts talking this shit. He's got a mouth on him, but... And he's just like, I like your friend, mommy. Like, you know? He's like, and it feels good. It feels good that what I'm doing, it can benefit him in some type of way. In a positive way. You know? I know he didn't get him out from nowhere. Probably got it from me. Because I was literally, especially drinking, had a mouth. I talked shit to people. A lot of shit. And sometimes I'm like, where did that shit from? And hello, he learned it from you. You know? And I'm like, where the hell did you learn to talk like that, kid? And he's like, hello, learned it from you. And he tells me too, just like that. Learned it from you. I got it from you. I'm like, shut up. You know? But it's just like it's crazy. And I think I might scream if I get hit with another reset button. But I'll get through it. I'll get through it with the help of this programming people in this program and keep me doing what I'm doing. And just want to say thank you. Thank you for being there and thank you for being a part of my life. My life.
Fantastic. Thank you. And I'm afraid we have run out of time for the sharing portion of this meeting.